Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of New Sense. We're so glad that you're back here with us.
Uh-oh, podcast time.
It's podcast
time. Hey, I've got some breaking news to start off with right off the bat. My friend Harry's hair is looking exquisite today.
Oh,
yeah, so you're missing out at home. That's the problem with podcasts. You can't see how sexy you look, Harry.
I'm all right with it, because now they all just have to assume that you're correct.
Absolutely. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm excited to be back. How are you?
Me too. I'm also very excited to be back. I was itching to get another episode out.
You were so keen coming off the back of the last one.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was great. It was like, can we do these more regularly?
Yeah.
No.
Definitely a big thank you to everyone who gave the first episode a listen. We've been getting some really lovely feedback, so we were always appreciating that.
Decent amount of listeners too. Really happy. We broke 100 Spotify listens, I'm pretty sure. We were getting very close.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, big for us.
Yeah.
And overall, with like the total number of individual listens, we were getting well on our way to the 800 mark.
Nice.
Yeah, which is just
great.
So
yeah.
Exciting. So yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, and hopefully you're enjoying it, not just pushing through because you're friends with us.
And on that note,
let's get into the fortnightly fact fight, our fortnightly session where we talk about all the news of today here in Australia and around the world.
Start us off with some local news, Christopher. What have you got for us today?
Well, this one's just been announced quite recently in the last 24 hours, actually. We've got Scott Morrison announcing in Dolby this morning that $100 million will be given as a drought relief package to our struggling farmers.
Really interesting one. Just doing some reading on this before in The Guardian and The Australian, talking about how, yes, it might have been a $100 million package, but in fact, he was contesting Labor and the Greens on info about a $3.4 billion package for drought relief.
A little bit of a disparity there between those.
It's interesting. It is fantastic. Obviously, drought relief is a major political issue.
Of course, any sort of relief is great. Yeah,
particularly in rural Queensland. Although, let's not forget that that is a major voting section.
Right, and as you were saying to me before we were recording, one of the things that won Scott Morrison the election was regional Queensland.
Yeah, rural Queensland. Yeah. It was possibly the thing because that was one of the big surprises. Is that so much of rural Queensland turned away from Labor? That was like the unlosable election. Whole thing. That you can tell they're really trying hard to work that base. If you're looking at this cynically, you can say they're definitely catering to a very important voting factor. Mm. But also, you know, the Liberal government, to some extent, do care about servicing the Australian people. Like, this is one of their big deals was drought relief. They ran on that.
So. Well, I think any, you know, government to some extent hopefully cares about that. But.
Well, yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
$100 million to the drought relief package.
Yeah, this was announced right after Scott Morrison got back from America. Hot off the heels of Dolby. This is hot off the heels of, and we'll talk about this a bit more in our national international section, but this is hot off the heels of him announcing $150 million in the US to NASA to aid in getting to Mars, I believe. And so right after that happened, we heard a lot of flack towards the PM about, oh, well, why aren't our farmers getting this and that? And so obviously now to come back and then immediately announce this. I wonder if this was planned at the time or if this has sort of been thought about since.
Yeah, it was always going to be strategic, this announcement, because this will win them huge political points. And, like, you know, obviously it's years until the next election, but they're really trying to solidify that rural voting base now. Mm. It's absolutely strategic. But it is interesting that you were saying that, you know, $150 million towards the Mars mission in America and only $100 million to drought-ridden Australia.
Right. And we were all saying for the podcast that when you think about it, really in the big context of things, $100 million isn't that much.
No, considering it was a $3.4 billion proposal originally, $100 million is a pittance, really. And, you know, how much is that actually going to do in the scheme of things?
Well, $33 million of the $100 million will go directly to a drought community support initiative, which will provide up to $3,000 to individual families each for groceries and sort of normal living expenses.
Yeah, relief. And there was also a really big mental health fund, which I actually think is brilliant.
Absolutely,
I think
extremely
important.
Fantastic, yeah.
So, good to see. I think it's been a well, just, you know, from my relatively ignorant knowledge, it's a well-structured drought relief package, but whether it's enough money, we'll leave that to the public.
Right, well, we have only time will tell, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Other than that, we don't have a lot of other local news. It's hot.
Yep. We're still, there's still drought.
It's not really news, I'm just angry about it.
Yeah, fair enough. Lots of bushfires.
Yeah, bushfires still going on, of course, obviously. But they're not really in the news anymore because everyone's sick of seeing them.
It's
so
funny,
that's
how
the news works.
News cycle, yeah. But that's actually, this is a personal note. It's right next to my little sister's preschool up in WA. There's bushfires raging as well.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, they had to evacuate.
Oh, so sorry to hear that.
No, it's like everyone's fine for the moment, but it's pretty hardcore, like, knowing that this is up in Broome in WA. It's getting really close to people.
Right, yeah.
Anyway, let's launch from local into national.
Yes. All right, so somewhat piggybacking off our discussions of Scott Morrison there, let's chat about him in America at the UN and visiting President Trump.
Yeah, one of the first prime ministers in Australia to be invited to a state dinner with the US president since the Bush era.
Well, the first.
Yeah, the first.
Yeah, since what I imagine would have been John Howard, probably.
Yeah, about that. I mean, we'd have to fact check, but more or less, it's a pretty odd honour to be bestowed upon Prime Minister Morrison.
Right,
President Trump.
And we were saying earlier that him and Trump have obviously been quite buddy-buddy, pretty much always,
Since Morrison got in, like, there's been widespread support from both parties. They've had nothing but nice things to say about each other.
Nice little bromance.
Yeah, I don't know how much of an endorsement that is on the international political level, but... Yeah. Yeah, so Scott Morrison was at the UN. Let's talk about that.
He did go to the UN and he delivered an address where he defended Australia's climate change action, citing that Australia will beat its 2020 Kyoto targets.
Now, it is necessary to note in this case that he was defending Australia's climate change initiative because we have recently been called out on a very global level at the Paraclimate Accords. We have been uninvited to one of the biggest international climate change initiatives because we have not put forward any new climate change goals.
That's pretty crazy to get uninvited.
it's quite disappointing. America was as well because they only invited countries that had committed to even more climate change targets and reductions in emissions.
Yeah. So despite Scott Morrison saying all these things at the UN, Australia's emissions are up since 2014.
Yeah, absolutely. And like Scott Morrison's defense on this was that we set our targets and meet them, but the rest of the world is going, well, maybe you should be setting higher targets.
Right. To play devil's advocate,
I
would point out that Australia's emissions on the global scale are only something like 1.4%, something around that. It's very small. So it could be argued that we are doing enough because we're not a huge contributor. What would you think about that?
I think comparatively to the rest of the world, like, yes, it might be small emissions, but we are caretakers of an extremely large... We are a continent, more or less, like we are Australasia. We're one of the few countries that takes up most of the continent, and that continent includes vast mineral resources, vast deserts, the Great Barrier Reef. Like, we have a responsibility to the globe just based on where we are and what we have control of. And clearly, emissions are going to affect all of that on a global level. Mm. And also, we're something of a figurehead, as you were saying before. So I think it's extremely important.
Right. So on that figurehead point, you could say that we have the chance here to really become like a kind of leader in this kind of progressive climate change policy as a kind of first world nation.
Yeah, absolutely. I think any first world nation has that responsibility. Mm. If you are an industrialized nation and there's very, very clear evidence about the harm that industrialization is doing to the global environment, well, then of course you have a responsibility to reduce your impact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, moving on from that.
Yeah. So next up on the national front, we have New South Wales decriminalising abortion. As you were saying earlier, Harry, this one kind of came out of nowhere, didn't it? We didn't see this coming. And maybe that's just because we don't live in New South Wales, but I didn't hear anything about this until it came out in the news that it had been decriminalised.
Yes, certainly a surprise announcement to us anyway. I mean, like, as you said, we might just not be plugged into local state-level New South Wales politics. But it is the last Australian state to decriminalise abortion, which makes the countrywide...
Yeah.
Everywhere is now.
Yeah, the vote passed the New South Wales Senate 26 votes to 14. The New South Wales Premier Gladys did not attend the vote as she was running the state.
Please note here that Chris cannot pronounce the New South Wales Premier's name.
I cannot. I'm not going to try. But yes, she did not attend the vote as she was, quote, running the state. That is actually what she said.
Isn't that just incredible? I will not voice an opinion on this incredibly important issue to my state because I'm busy running said state.
Chris, why couldn't you come to my birthday party? I was eating food. Isn't that just a thing you do?
I was eating food from your birthday party. I was running your birthday party.
I was running your birthday party
so
from
my bedroom.
So I can't
come to it. Yeah. Wonderful. All right, moving on from that, we have another state legalising something.
We do, well, territory.
Territory, in fact, yeah.
The ACT, that is, has legalised marijuana for personal use starting from the beginning of next year. It's become the first state or territory to legalise marijuana for personal use in the country.
And I love how they say, so they're saying ACT residents will be able to have up to 2 personal plants mm-hmm. and 50 grams of dried cannabis per person.
Yep.
But they're very vague on how people should actually acquire
said
cannabis.
No, I believe it is actually pretty easy to get like the seeds to grow it sent through the mail. I don't think it can be picked up or anything like that. I'm sure there are ways that people will be...
Well, obviously people are going
to
get it.
If people want to get weed in the ACT, I reckon they're going to be able to do it. But I think this is probably more indicative of a... legislative change in the way that like marijuana is going to be dealt with.
Yeah, and perceived on a national level.
Right,
certainly.
Yeah, but particularly in the ACT, I think it's less about smoking weed because people are going to do that no matter what. It's more about, I think, a representative thing of how it's going to be treated legally.
Yeah, absolutely. Like this is, you know, we saw this in America where one state legalized it and then a whole swath did and it's now legal over most of the country.
Mm.
So whether that will be the case here, it's going to be extremely interesting to follow these developments.
Yeah, it should be mentioned that it will remain illegal under federal Commonwealth law, so there could be complications there, but I somehow think that it won't be, you know, shot down. I think that, I don't know, that's just my suspicion.
Yeah.
Many federal ministers such as Peter Dutton have obviously criticised the motion, which was always going to happen.
Yeah, drugs are always going to be controversial no matter which way you slice it.
Exactly.
Just look at the pill testing. Oh, extremely good pill testing documentary by Tom Tilley just came out.
But
I highly recommend checking that out. He's the Triple J hack anchor. Really interesting stuff.
Cool. Check that out if you're interested, guys. So from there, shall we move on to our international section?
Absolutely. Oh, you failed to mention the last little show note you put in under the marijuana legislation.
What was that?
The fact that New Sense will now be recording from camera. After the...
Yes.
Anyway, moving on. International stories.
Yes.
Massive one these last few weeks are the drone strikes in Saudi Arabia. Now, this has an extremely interesting connection to our last episode on the economy, actually. Mm. Because let's start from the beginning. How much do you know about this issue?
Not much. You've explained this to me mostly, but some of the notes that I've got down here is that after drone strikes by Iran onto Saudi oil fields, tensions between the two countries are escalating at an alarming rate.
Yeah, okay. That's good. Well, the two countries were...
Excellent. I did a news.
The two countries were Iran and Saudi Arabia. So there's no... As far as I can tell, I haven't checked the story today, but there's still no tangible evidence that it was actually Iran who sent the drones.
Oh, it's just suspected.
Very heavily suspected. Right. And the US came out straight away and was like, yeah, it was Iran. And everyone was like, how do you know that?
And the US is publicly supporting Saudi Arabia.
And particularly...
And claiming that they'll back them if need be.
Particularly, the US, but particularly Donald Trump, issued a tweet on the day of saying that the US military was locked and loaded and waiting for confirmation from the kingdom, which is an extremely alarming thing.
That's just a weird thing, yeah. The US is just waiting for Saudi word to just...
Well, it's at
wage
no point,
war on Iran.
Yeah, well, US foreign policy is they decide who they will aid, whether it be militarily or foreign aid wise.
Yeah.
Never, it's a historical precedent for them to go, yeah, we're waiting on someone to tell us where to send our military.
That's bizarre. And when I was reading this article, I just couldn't help but thinking how fortunate we are that we don't have some kind of agreement or treaty with the US that means that we have to go to war with them if they go to war. I'm just glad that doesn't exist, because that would be terrible.
Chris, I don't know how to tell you this, but...
Oh, we have one?
Yeah.
That's terrible.
We've had it for a while.
All right, moving on to the United Nations.
There was one more point on that. So, timing back into the economy. The drone strikes in Saudi Arabia were on their two biggest oil manufacturing.
Oh, yes, of course.
So that immediately, when these strikes were announced, that made the price of oil rise quite high. And this could have a massive effect on the global economy because oil is an international resource. And the moment it goes up, that affects how people budget because, you know, we've got to put away more for petrol and that affects what people spend. And as we remember from last week, what people spend affects on how well the economy is doing. So if people are spending less, there's less stimulus for businesses. So this could be yet another factor in something that could eventually lead to a global recession. So yeah, just like really illustrating that point.
Yeah, you had a really good anecdote the other day about spaghetti.
Oh, yeah, no, I completely stole that. I think I stole it from The Guardian. But it was talking about how oil is really important because if spaghetti gets really expensive, we'll just eat something else. Mm. But people have to get to work. Oil is not something you can just easily replace. Mm.
So that'll be a very interesting one to follow. All just hoping we don't go to war.
Yeah, that's particularly interesting. Highly recommend doing some more reading on that. Moving on to the next one.
The United Nations. Obviously, there's no way people haven't heard about this story. It's been one of the biggest stories of the week. But following the worldwide climate strike, Greta Thunberg, I think I'm pronouncing that right.
I think you did pretty well, actually. Yeah,
delivered a scathing speech at the United Nations, basically attacking the world for not doing enough on climate change.
Did you listen to it?
I have listened to it.
It was chilling. The speech has received a lot of criticism, which, you know, was going to happen.
Of course, yeah.
President Trump seemingly, just that absolutely mocking tweet.
Which she has now made her Twitter bio.
Oh, God, I hadn't seen that. It's amazing.
Because he just retweeted the video, I believe, and said, looks like a very bright young girl, nice young girl with a bright future ahead of her. So she's changed her Twitter bio to a wonderful bright young girl with a bright future ahead of her whatever it is.
What a great clap.
That's quite funny, I think.
So President Trump was one, and unfortunately our own Prime Minister was another.
Yeah, he came out and said that, basically his response is that he didn't want to impose unnecessary anxiety on Australian children.
It's like, yeah, we'll keep that in mind when we're all dying from heat death.
Yeah, I'll be a little anxious.
Yeah, the oceans are raising up to flood Tasmania.
Yeah, I don't feel like we need to say too much about that point, though, apart from acknowledging it, because there's just so much being said about it already.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So climate strike, it's a big one.
The climate. And our last international report of the week is pertaining to reports of cruelty against China's Muslim community, which have been quite rampant over the last week or so.
Yeah, not just cruelty, but systematic repression from a number of sources. We've checked out the ABC in Australia, and we've checked out international sources like Business Insider and Al Jazeera, talking about how at the United Nations there was a report filed against repression of Chinese Muslim community and how the Chinese government seems to be completely silent on this issue.
Right, yeah. We saw video footage allegedly showing Chinese Muslims blindfolded, being led while handcuffed at a train station, which was bizarre.
Yeah, reports are ranging from really quite horrific detention camps to organ harvesting.
Right, yeah. So, this is just bizarre because, of course, as you said, you know, China's not really keen to talk about this, so we're getting a lot of hearsay.
But it's also like, it is hearsay, but the United States and more than 30 other countries at the UN have condemned what they have termed China's horrific campaign of repression against the Uyghur Muslim minority in the western regions of Xinjiang.
Yeah.
Not good.
Not good, yeah.
That's my take on it.
You know what, Harry, that's it.
It's safe.
Yeah, China has previously said that the camps, these detention camps, are necessary to fight Muslim extremism.
So that's particularly interesting because it shows that the whole perception of Muslim extremism is an international thing, not just a Western society thing.
Right, right.
And treated very poorly in countries worldwide. Mm. But, you know, the UN has called them out for it, so it'll be interesting to see what develops from here.
Yeah.
All right, so we make things a little bit lighter. We've got a token feel-good story here.
Oh, we do indeed. So this is quite pertinent at the moment, given our talking about the climate and all those sorts of things. Costa Rica, Harry. Let's talk about Costa Rica.
Costa Rica will run on more than 98% renewable energy for the fifth consecutive year.
That's crazy. The figure here I've got is 98.84%.
Yeah, of Costa Rica's power. It's come from renewable resources.
Yes, 67.5% of its energy is from hydropower, 17% from wind, 13.5% from geothermal sources, and 0.84% from biomass and solar panels. The remaining 1.16% corresponds to backup plants.
And let's not forget that one of the main pushes in politics in Australia for more mining and more coal is the fact that we would be unable to sustain, like, environmental measures like wind power and solar power would be unable to sustain an economy. And obviously Australia is a very different place from Costa Rica, but the precedent's there.
Right.
So fantastic.
That
was
our, that put a smile on our face.
Props to Costa Rica.
Yeah, good on you, Costa Rica.
Cool. All right. Shall we move into our deep dive for the week?
Let's do it.
Oh, save, can't you see? We are talking about America this week.
America, home of the free, land of the eagles.
Sure.
That's, I believe, how the saying goes.
That's, yep, more or less.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah. So this week we are talking about America and America's government and their global influence, with particular emphasis on the fact that they have just started to do something that has only ever been attempted 3 times in previous history, which is impeach a sitting president.
Yes, and as always, I'll be here to ask the questions that you're afraid to ask, because I hadn't heard of this place until today. What was it called again, Harry?
America.
America. Yeah, no, that's going to take some time.
Yeah, you get the pronunciation right.
How was it, sorry?
America.
America. Yeah. Great. So what have you got to say about America, Harry?
All right, let's talk about what they are. Like, obviously, we all know
what
America.
They are.
We're not starting from dot here, but let's talk about their government.
Yes.
And particularly also how it's similar to ours, because our government is a mashup of two political systems that are very prevalent in the world. That is the Washington system, America's system, and the Westminster system, which is British.
Yep.
So our system has actually been referred to in the past as the Washminster system.
Sounds That's like a catchy, cleaning product, right? Yeah. I feel like it should be in the laundry.
Mr. Washminster.
Mr. Washminster.
Very similar. We are a federation, Australia. A lot of people don't actually know that, but we are a series of federated states. So we are independent states that are originally independent and now run at a national level. America is the world's oldest surviving federation. They are a representative democracy, which is very similar to how we function. We function as a representative democracy, but we are in fact a constitutional monarchy.
Yeah,
we still report to good old Queen Liz.
Queen Lizzie.
Because we are a colony, but interestingly enough, obviously America broke away from the British.
Which I believe was a bit of a tiff,
a bit of a thing.
Yeah,
something about tea, right?
Something about tea.
So interesting statistic here for you. There is the Economist, which is one of the leading sources on economy news in the world, has an index called the Worldwide Democracy Index, which ranks countries by how good their democracies are. Take a guess at where America, good old freedom, comes in.
Have to be number one, surely. The most free place in the world.
But take 24. It's in at number 25.
25, guys. Number 25. That's ridiculous.
Is it funny?
Where were we again?
Number nine.
Go Aussies.
Repping it.
Yeah.
Norway is in at number one.
Yes. A lot of Scandinavian states up there.
Very good. I think the top three, it was like Iceland, Norway, and Sweden.
Yeah.
New Zealand in at number four.
Good on them.
Cousins across the ditch, killing it. Moving on to more about America, they function, again, similar to how we do with the government on a federal, state, and a local level.
Right.
Those different branches of government have jurisdiction over different levels of things. And their federal government consists of three branches: legislative, executive, and judicial.
Right.
So three levels: state, national, state, federal, and local.
Mm.
And then the federal split into legislative, executive, and judicial.
Executionary.
Executionary. I mean, we joke. But
no, that's true, yeah.
To kind of explain what these are a little bit. Legislative is the legislature. They're the ones who bring new laws into being.
Mm.
And in America, that is Congress.
Congress.
And in here, like, we have a very similar system. Once again, we have two houses. We have the Senate. And we have the House of Reps. Over there, they have the House and the Senate.
Right,
it's very similar.
Much the same.
Yeah, exactly. We just don't call ours a Congress.
Yeah.
So in order for a new law to be made into law, it needs to go through both houses.
Right, just like us.
Yeah, exactly. And houses consist of representatives who are elected in one way or another. So in the House, it is people who are based on population distribution, and in the Senate, it is based on a fixed number of representatives per state.
All right, so also quite similar to us.
Yeah, like in Australia, I think it's 12 per state, and yep. In America, I'm pretty certain it's two or three, it's one of them.
Okay, well, which makes sense because it's a lot more states.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, a key difference is we followed a Westminster system in forming our government from our parliament.
Right.
So thus, like, you know, our parliament's made up a bunch of ministers, and the minister who in charge is the prime one.
The prime minister, you might say.
The prime functioning minister. Of the ministers, he is the primest.
Yes.
So that's a very brief
overview
of the American governmental system.
Yes.
Is there anything you don't know about?
No, I think I'm good.
You're pretty good.
What's this America thing again?
Like, what are we talking about specifically?
This country, where is it? Yeah.
West?
West.
Yep.
Okay, great. That's all I needed to know. Thank you.
Cool. Good stuff.
So moving on to more now and what's going on in America right now.
Yeah. So where we are now is impeachment, which is a major thing.
Yes.
So yeah, it has happened a few times in history, starting with Andrew Johnson.
Jackson.
I'm pretty sure I made this mistake before, and it is Andrew Johnson.
Well, either way, it was a man named Andrew.
Yep.
And he's dead now.
This was back in the 1800s, so this was ages ago, and it took over another 100 years for it to happen again with Bill Clinton, that naughty, naughty man.
Silly old Billy.
Yeah. Taking a task for an affair he had with his secretary.
Oh. But he was not actually removed from office.
No.
Even though he did reach impeachment, which we'll get into.
So, yeah. May as well clarify that point now.
Right, because being impeached doesn't mean that you lose the presidency.
No, yeah, common misconception. So, impeachment basically takes place in the House, which is Democrat-controlled at the moment.
Yeah.
So, what that means is that a majority of people in the House have to say, we are impeaching this president, which is basically a reprimand.
Mm.
After that, it's taken to the Senate, the next level of government, where it has to have a two-thirds majority in order to remove a sitting president from office.
And the Republicans control the Senate.
Exactly. So it would be extraordinary for Republicans to vote to remove a sitting Republican president.
Right. Unless there was some incredibly damning
information.
And what has been alleged, Harry?
So what's happened, to bring you up to date with where we are now, is that the Democrats' call for impeachment is based on the allegation that Trump withheld aid money that had already been approved by Congress in order to pressure a foreign government into helping rig a United States election.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's, when you put it like that.
Pretty major, yeah.
Some pretty serious allegations.
Yeah, what's actually happened is a whistleblower has come forward, and they have said that, clearly, the thing about whistleblowers is they're anonymous in order to protect them.
Right.
So they have said they've been someone on the president's staff, possibly. They've been someone who is in a position to hear this phone call between Trump and the newly elected president of the Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky.
Mm.
And it was a phone call that Trump made in order to congratulate the new president, but he also, in the phone call, heavily alleged that if Ukraine wanted more aid money, which they have been receiving America for quite some time, something in the thousands of millions of dollars.
Billions.
Billions by this point. That if they wanted this aid money to continue, they would start attempting to dig up dirt and investigate the Democratic frontrunner, Joe Biden.
Former vice president.
Yeah, former vice president. He is now running again for president on his own platform, and he is currently in the best-looking position.
He's leading the
Democratic charge, yeah. And possibly, in Trump's eyes at least, the biggest threat to Trump's presidency.
Mm.
So Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, used to work for a Ukrainian energy dealership.
Okay.
And there was allegedly some dodgy business dealings, which Trump has heard about and is now pressuring the Ukrainian government to dig into. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is fairly damning stuff.
Very naughty allegations. And so the phone call has just been released. What do we know from that?
Okay, so there's been a transcript, although it's not really a transcript. So part of Trump trying to defuse the situation over in America is that he's gone, oh, obviously everything's above board. In order to prove it, I'm going to release the information about the phone call, and said he'd release a transcript. But wasn't really. It's a little dodgy. It's been something that they've written up that describes the phone call.
And things have been redacted.
Things have been redacted, and it's been, like, the original version of the phone call has been stored on this incredibly secure server in the White House, which is only meant for, like, privileged international security information. Weird. So it really shouldn't be there because it was more of a social call than anything else. So the very fact that that's happened is suspicious. Yeah, there's a bunch of really, like, sus stuff going on on the down low.
Yeah.
And the Democrats have finally thought that this is enough, this is the thing that they're going to start impeachment proceedings over. And you have to think you've got a president pretty dead to rights.
That's a big step for Nancy Pelosi to make.
Absolutely, because with Clinton, it was very clearly the Monica Lewinsky scandal.
Right.
With Nixon, it was Watergate. This is, we cannot stress this enough, this is a big deal because...
This is huge.
Yeah. Basically, there's been a lot of Democrats who were more conservative Democrats, and that they are the reason why they haven't tried to impeach Trump already.
Yeah.
It's because they were elected in swing seats that actually voted for Trump in the 2016 election.
Right.
And even these conservative Democrats who don't want to lose power in their seats have gone, no, this is beyond the pale.
Right.
We have to take President Trump to task for this.
Yeah. So... Jeez.
Yeah, overall, this is going to be absolutely fascinating.
Very
to
interesting
to
watching, yeah.
There's new news coming all the time. Keep an eye on the Washington Post and the New York Times.
BuzzFeed.
obviously. Don't. Not the Onion. Clickhole.
Yeah. The Tudor Advocate.
Look to
probably
your sources,
have some
people.
Interesting opinions. Do you mind if I ask you some questions about all this, Harry?
Oh, please do.
My first question is... Just step back a bit. What is a whistleblower exactly? What does that mean when we refer to that? I know you said that it's someone that we try to keep anonymous, but what exactly is that?
Okay, so a whistleblower is a term for someone who is in a government who exposes privileged information about a government. Usually, basically, it's someone who is providing information to a journalist or a media outlet who may then be in danger for providing said information.
Right. So it's more about the scale at which the information could be damning to that person.
Pretty much, yeah. Because if it's like, if it's a safe thing to talk about, they're just an informant.
Right. Right.
To be a whistleblower, you're blowing the whistle on privileged information, and that can get extremely dangerous. Yeah. Whistleblowers have been routinely imprisoned.
Well, look at Julian Assange and...
Yeah, exactly. The classic example. Yeah. WikiLeaks had to take cover in a foreign embassy for years because Julian Assange put up a bunch of United States documents online for anyone to read, and they are still attempting to imprison... he's currently in prison, but are still attempting to bring him to justice after... so many years on the run. So, for obvious reasons, the whistleblower behind the Zelensky call is staying anonymous for the moment, but they have continued to release information, which is interesting.
Yeah. My next question, could you please explain in a bit more detail what exactly impeachment is? Because I feel like that word's getting thrown around a lot, but I feel like we don't still really know what it means.
Okay, so interestingly enough, there's no real definition about what impeachment has to cover. So the House, as far as I can ascertain, can impeach a president for pretty much whatever they like. It's more just what they can get the power to cover, because you need a majority in the House, which I think means you need about 218 votes.
And he said that they're approaching that.
Yeah, last time I checked, I think it was when the transcript had been released, there were about 204 Democrats who they could really reasonably rely on to vote to impeach President Trump.
So they're 14 away from...
Yeah, so the odds are looking good that this is going to happen.
That was my next question. Is what are the actual chances of the impeachment and also his removal from office separately? So let's chat about impeachment first.
Sure, okay, so tying these two questions together. Impeachment basically means when he is impeached that it goes to the Senate and that's where the real trial happens, but he can keep being president if he's impeached. That's what happened to Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton was actually impeached, and then he was acquitted in the Senate, which means that they decided he was not guilty after all and didn't need to be removed from office, and he just kept on governing.
Mm.
And we all kind of forgot about it.
Right, yeah. Because I remember as a kid, whenever it was spoken about that, oh yeah, Bill Clinton got impeached, I always just assumed that he was actually removed from office. It wasn't until I was maybe like 14, 15 that I was like, oh no, he served his full term.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
I feel like that word impeachment is so loaded when actually it's not really what people think it is.
Yeah, so what will happen with the impeachment process if it does go ahead is that possibly the most damaging thing for Republicans is that Trump will be cross-examined in the Senate, and every Republican in the Senate will be made to say either why they are backing him or why they are not, which can be a very polarizing thing, particularly as this is the first time that a president has been impeached coming into a new presidential election that he is running for.
What do we think the actual chances of his removal from office are?
Pretty low.
Right.
It would have to be a quite remarkable set of circumstances, although I don't think the Democrats are actually beyond hope about that at this point.
Yeah, but my next question, because as you said, and I agree, I think his actually the chances of his removal from office from this are low. Do we think that this is all just a bit of a show for the election next year?
Well, interestingly enough, part of the reason the Democrats have been on the fence about whether they were going to actually file impeachment proceedings were that Nancy Pelosi has maintained, oh, by the way, on that point, Nancy Pelosi is the Speaker for the House, which means that she is the main person in control. She is a Democrat. The Democrats currently have power in the House, just to like clarify that point. Yeah, she thought it would be a really politically idiotic maneuver to make for a long
time. She avoided it, right.
Yeah, because, you know, the odds are is that Trump will be acquitted in the Senate, and she thought if that happened, it would be an affirmation of Trump, and the Democrats could actually lose out politically, which will probably still happen, but the fact that she's willing to go ahead with it now speaks to a real shift in the status quo.
Right. What chances do we think that this will affect Trump's chances of re-election in 2020?
I think it's definitely going to affect his chances.
How heavily, though? That's the question, I suppose.
Absolutely. Another interesting point on this fact is that it's actually made things a lot more complicated for the Democratic frontrunner as well.
Right, yeah.
Because Joe Biden, like it or not, has become embroiled in this whole thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of... The strategy that Trump is taking is exactly what he did to Hillary back in the 2016 election. Basically painting this political smear campaign for someone who has not done something right in the political sector. With Hilton, it was Benghazi. With Biden, it will be the Ukraine.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see who loses out more in this deal, although, you know, whether Biden actually does become the Democratic candidate.
We still have to wait and see, yeah. And I wonder what chances this has of affecting that.
Yeah, I actually think that's the part that not many people are talking about.
Right.
And I think there's a good chance that this is going to be a real blow to Biden.
Because Biden's not in the lead by much.
No, it's pretty well torn between him, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, in that order. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how this develops. To kind of answer your question going back a bit, I think it will have an effect on Trump. I don't know whether it's going to be the blow that's just too early to tell.
Right. We just got to wait and see.
Yeah. Although, you know, we will, because you and I have a lot of fun watching American politics.
Yeah.
It's like watching sport for us.
It really is. And it's nice because it doesn't sort of affect us that directly. Yeah. And then we go to war with Iran and it does.
Excellent. Shall we wrap up our deep dive on that note?
I think that pretty much sums up our deep dive for the week. So to summarize, wacky-doo America.
Okay, so yeah, shall we continue on to our shower thought?
Yeah, I suppose we'll wrap up the episode.
Yeah, absolutely. I did last week's. Would you like to do this week's?
Surely, may I just...
Yeah, I've got it written there for you.
Yes. So, our shower thought for the week, biting your tongue while eating, is example of how you can still screw something up even with decades of experience.
So don't be too hard on yourself.
Yeah, that's right. And on that note, thank you so much for listening to episode 2 of News Sense, our podcast about the news. News podcast!
Yeah, that.
We hope, as always, we've tried to digest the news for you in a bit of a silly, fun way. That's our objective, as always.
Try to be a little bit entertaining, try to be a little bit informative. I think we did all right.
Yeah, absolutely. So we hope that you have a blessed day. May all your news be good news, as I believe the old saying goes.
May all your good be news and your news be good.
Yes, that's right. And on that note, I guess we'll wrap it up. Thank you so much.
See you in a fortnight.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.